At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
It was an awakening, an evolution that put me on this path. Like, I can do something about this. I can do more than just take these pills. I can empower myself and I can take control of this disease, and this disease will not define me.
You are listening to Veggie Doctor Radio, and this is episode number 141. Welcome to Veggie Doctor Radio. I am your host, Dr. Yami, board-certified pediatrician, certified lifestyle medicine physician, certified health and wellness coach, author, speaker, mother, wife, and human being. I passionately believe in the power of diet, habits, and mindset in sparking and sustaining well-being and joy in our lives. This podcast combines expert interviews and thoughtful monologues to explore plant-based nutrition, lifestyle medicine, parenting, mindset, and other exciting and fun topics. I hope that these episodes inspire you, uplift you, and equip you with the knowledge and tools to live your best life. Are you ready to get started? Let's do it. Well, hello there, veggie lovers. Welcome back to Veggie Doctor Radio. So pleased to be with you today. I have a fantastic episode for you with Dr. Sarai Stancic. She is amazing. She's so inspirational. Honestly, I think she's Superwoman, literally. Her story is just so impactful, and you can just see and feel and hear the passion exuding for her, the compassion, the love, the dedication to her patients to make a difference in this world, to cause that ripple effect. And she has already, because if you haven't heard, she has a documentary called Code Blue, and she just released a book called What's Missing from Medicine. So please check out these resources. The book is called What's Missing from Medicine from Dr. Sarai Stancic, and the documentary is called Code Blue. So Dr. Stancic is a board-certified physician with expertise in internal medicine, infectious diseases, and lifestyle medicine. She is a passionate advocate for change in healthcare by advocating for a shift in how we train physicians, placing greater emphasis on prevention and health preservation rather than solely on disease management. And she is empowering patients to achieve optimal health via lifestyle modification. A brilliant woman. You can just tell that she has so much going on in her mind. What we can do better, how we can help patients better, and using her own story, using her own pain and struggle to bolster her forward, In this episode, we talk about her plant-based healing journey, her journey with multiple sclerosis. It is a terrifying story. It's truly unbelievable what she went through, how many years she had to experience pain and disability on so many medications that were giving her side effects, and what happened to start changing that to the point that she ran a marathon. A marathon. That's insane. It's amazing. So she has not just experience as a physician helping treat patients, but she has personal lived experience, what it's like to have a chronic condition, what it's like to be told over and over again, this is just a disease that has to be managed to slow the progression, but the progression is going to continue. You're going to be in a wheelchair in this many number of years. So wow, she's just so strong, so powerful. We talk about what the biggest problem is in the current medical system and how we approach chronic disease. We talk about lifestyle medicine. She defines it in her own way, which I love the visual that she gives. You can also see that visual if you purchase her book, What's Missing from Medicine. We talk about why she's so passionate. We talk about what habits she believes that her patients struggle with the most implementing and changing. And what's an easy place to start? What she wishes more patients knew, and what personal habit she's most proud of, where she feels like she's, quote, a professional in one of her habits. You're going to love it. So I'm just so grateful that Dr. Stancic was able to come on the show and tell us her perspective, give us a little bit of her story, and offer us some hope, offer us compassion and love, positivity, so many gems. You're probably going to want to write some of this stuff down because she just offers just wisdom, true wisdom that's going to help you in your life. This is the kind of episode that I love having on this podcast because you can take it and apply it immediately to your life and start feeling a change in your well-being. So without further ado, let us welcome Dr. Sarai Stancic. Dr. Sarai Stancic, thank you so much for joining me on Veggie Doctor Radio. What an honor and a pleasure. You're doing some fabulous work. So thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, and we're off to a great start. You pronounced my name correctly, and that's half the battle. most of my interviews start with Sarai or some. So thank you so much for pronouncing my name correctly.
Well, you're welcome. Well, you know, it is something I had to learn as a podcaster because I'm so used to just like getting down to business and going, and then I realize I don't know how to pronounce my guest's name, so I need to confirm before we start recording. And even sometimes I still get it wrong, but I try my best. As somebody who also has a name that might be a little unusual,
yeah, sure,
it is something important to me. So you have a lot that you can tell us, but let's start at the beginning. Tell me about your plant-based healing journey.
Yeah, so my journey really began about 25 years ago when I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. In the middle of a busy call at the hospital, I found that I couldn't feel my legs, and that led to an emergent MRI, and the diagnosis of multiple sclerosis came and really changed the course of my life. And, you know, I followed the conventional interventions that we know well, that we are trained in. Disease-modifying therapies were started initially, and I found myself that within 8 years of the diagnosis, I had become largely dependent on about a dozen medications, and the disease-modifying therapy on which I was on still resulted in having exacerbations at least once or twice a year, and I started to lose function. By 2003, I was largely dependent on a cane, depressed, and I had largely lost hope. And then by chance, I came across an article that discussed the connection between diet and multiple sclerosis, and I was struck by it. And here I was, an attending physician at the VA hospital in New York, you know, double board certification in infectious diseases and internal medicine. I knew nothing about diet and lifestyle and its effect on health outcomes. So that catalyzed a great interest in me. And it led to one of the first publications that I read was an article published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1952 by a physician named Roy Swank. And in it, he discussed how saturated fat might very likely be playing a role in the pathogenesis of multiple sclerosis. He went on to not only describe his hypothesis, but he actually started treating patients with a low-fat plant-based diet and followed about 140 patients over 34 years and ultimately published data in the 1990s in the journal The Lancet, where he reported 95% of his patients remained disability-free. And that struck me, and it created a whole lot of hope and joy that this could potentially serve me. And that's really when it all began, though. 2003 is when I really began this quest to learn as much as I could about how food affects the disease state, and not only food, but all other aspects of lifestyle. And as I learned more and more, I introduced more of these lifestyle changes into my own life. And it didn't happen in a week, and it didn't happen in a month, but over time, I started to feel better. You know, that fatigue that consumes MS patients began to lift. I started to feel my legs again. I started to, for the first time in a long time, engage in daily physical activity. At first, it was just a stationary bike on which my husband would assist me to get onto, and I could do a few minutes, and then exhausted and in pain, he'd assist me off. But over time, that I built that up, ultimately started to do a little bit of jogging. And then in 2010, about 7 years after I began these lifestyle changes, I crossed the finish line at a marathon. So I think the beautiful thing about lifestyle medicine, and certainly this idea of plant-based nutrition, I started this because of my diagnosis. But the wonderful thing is that not only did it benefit and improve the management and outcomes in MS, but it's also going to reduce my risk of breast cancer, my risk of colon cancer, my risk of diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's disease. That's why this prescription is incredibly powerful. And it's simple. It's really such a simple offering. All we have to do is introduce this idea of more fiber on our plate. You don't have to do it overnight, but where are you today? And what can we do today to just take it a step further? How can we introduce regular physical activity into our lives? And of course, the other aspects of lifestyle include sleep, stress management, addressing issues of substance abuse, that which can be problematic in our society, particularly today, where we're living through this COVID-19 pandemic, and so many of us are turning to substances to relieve some of that stress. And then finally, the aspect that often doesn't get much attention but is so important, this idea of social connectedness, our relationships in our lives, and how important they are in our health and well-being.
What a story. I think that word you said, simple, though, can both be a benefit of lifestyle medicine, but I think also because it's so simple, I think a lot of people don't believe it's as powerful as it is, you know, because I think we're used to things being like this technology and lots of research, and it took like decades to come up with this special treatment that's going to cure everything. And then people think, oh, well, I eat more fiber. How is that working? You know? So I think sometimes it's both a benefit, but also a disadvantage that it's so simple that people don't believe it. But really quick, I want to go back to the very beginning, because I can't even imagine back when you first got diagnosed, and I was reading your story, you had written about it, how, you know, you woke up, you were on call, that your beeper went off, and all of a sudden you couldn't feel your legs. I mean, you must have been absolutely terrified. Was there like a moment that you thought, okay, I'm imagining this, or did I just sleep at a weird angle? But then what shocked me is that you went into the MRI. It was a long time, like a couple of hours that you were in there, terrified. And then the radiologist was like, call all the medical students and residents, they need to see this. I mean, tell me a little bit about how you were feeling that night and what was going through your head.
Yeah. There was a lot of trauma that night. When I woke up, because before that beeper went off, I had been running around. I was on calls, running to the emergency room, back to the ICU. I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, literally running. And now I finally find a window to take a nap. At most, I might have slept for 20 minutes. You know, when you're in the middle of a busy call, your pager's constantly going off. It must have been like 20, 30 minutes. Pager was off. And all of a sudden, I can't feel anything from my belly button down. I don't know what to think. There's just fear that flushes through me. And honestly, I don't even remember how I got from there to the emergency room. And then once I was in the MRI, and again, here I was, a medical resident, having ordered MRIs, I don't know how many times for patients, but I had never experienced that, like going into that machine and the claustrophobia. Your whole body goes in there, and I'm terrified. I don't know what's going on. Everyone's looking at me, and I'm at the hospital where I went to medical school there. I was a resident there. Everybody knew me. So the ER physician, everybody was like, they didn't know what to say. You know, they were scared for me, but everyone trying to smile and keep it really, really positive. But you know, when you're in the MRI machine, there's like a little mirror and you can see out, and I could see the technician behind the window, and I could see two of my girlfriends, the attending physician and the chief resident there, and I could see their expressions, and whatever they're seeing in front of them is not good. So I knew it was something problematic, something scary. So I can feel the experience in the MRI machine. And I think I was in there for 2 hours, just my heart racing, just fear. And then at some point while I'm in that machine, I start to feel this burning pain that's just running through my legs. And I go from numbness to now this like searing pain that is just traveling up and down my left leg. And I don't know, it's just tears and fear. Finally, when the study was completed, of course, I'm looking at my friends and they're smiling now. They're trying to keep face and make me feel safe. But that's when I heard, as they wheeled the gurney out, the radiology attending who didn't realize that I was there, excitedly said, "Go get the medical students. Go get the residents. Come on, these are great images." Like you would. You're trying to teach, but of course, I was there, and when I heard it, it just crushed me.
Wow, it's unbelievable. I can't even imagine going through that. My heart goes out to you and the younger you that had to experience that. My next question is, multiple sclerosis is definitely one of those conditions that you hear from experts saying over and over again, this is a chronic, debilitating, progressive disease. Expect this. And you said that you were told the same thing. Expect you're going to be in a wheelchair in this amount of years. This is probably going to be your quality of life. Get prepared for that. But did you ever hear any other healthcare professional telling you otherwise, like alternative treatments or changing your diet or anything? Did you only hear this is just going to get worse? Just take the medicines and deal with it.
I didn't hear any of that alternative positivity. It was all, we have to be realistic. And in fact, when I had that first MRI in 1995, I had quite a bit of burden of disease. So the neurologist, I mean, I saw the images, I still have them. He said to me, it was a week after I turned 28 years old. And he said to me, look, it is very likely that within 10 to 20 years, you will be in a wheelchair. And you need to plan for that. And the best we can do, and at the time, he said to me, you're actually lucky because the first drug had just been approved by the FDA for multiple sclerosis, a drug called Betaseron. So he said to me, you have this chance to take this medication, which has been proven and shown to slow the progression of the disease. It doesn't cure the disease, but it will slow the debilitating effects of the disorder. And I obviously as a physician, I knew very well what multiple sclerosis was, and having, cared for patients with MS and even spent time as a resident and medical student on the neurology ward that took primarily care of MS patients, I knew what it was. So to hear him say that the future for me was going to be a wheelchair, a nursing home setting, I had just turned 28. I was on the brink of completing my residency, a dream come true for me. I mean, I'm an immigrant to this country. I grew up in Newark, New Jersey. I work really, really hard to achieve my dream. And I was on the brink, you know, of completing it all. And I was excited about the future. And then it was like everything, the rug was pulled out from under me. And that's resulted in a lot of anger and depression, along with all of the symptomatology that I had to deal with. I mean, my bladder stopped doing what it's supposed to be doing. The pain that I experienced, the fatigue, it was, and even at one point losing vision, you know, I developed optic neuritis. So the thing about MS is that it's so unpredictable. And today you can feel fine. And then tomorrow, terrible things happen. And then the other thing is that MS can also almost be invisible, where you may look okay, but you're experiencing a lot of symptoms. So dealing with that, and I still had to complete my residency. I had agreed to complete a chief resident year the following year, and then a fellowship, which I did go on to do. But I can tell you that getting through the completion of my residency and my fellowship was really, really tough. But I managed. But it was largely with a lot of medication and taking these meds. I mean, the medication Betaseron is a really tough drug. It's a drug that I had to inject every night. And it was a drug that I would have to pre-medicate with Tylenol or ibuprofen because of the side effect profile of the drug. So I would inject the drug at 10 o'clock and at 2 o'clock, like clock, you know, it was like always at around between two and three o'clock in the morning, I would wake up with violent shaking chills, like the bed shaking, fever, just, I felt like I had the flu. And then you can't sleep through that. So then I would be given Xanax or Ambien to knock me out. And I would willingly and take that medication because it took me out of that state of pain. And so I became dependent on those medications. And then, you know, the neuropathy and the pain that I experienced in my leg. So it was just, you can see how the side effects of the medicines led to more prescriptions, depression, Prozac, fatigue. It was remarkable that in my 30s, I had a pill box and I would go to work with it. And I was solely dependent on it. It was like, you know how people can't go anywhere without their cell phones, like they're constantly attached to them, right? You feel like naked without your cell phone. I felt naked without my pill box. And it wasn't until that moment where I read that article about food and its connection. I always call it my aha moment. It's like all of a sudden, you know, in The Wizard of Oz, where everything's black and white and all of a sudden there's color. That was for me that moment where it introduced like it was an awakening, an evolution that put me on this path. Like, I can do something about this. I can do more than just take these pills. I can empower myself, and I can take control of this disease, and this disease will not define me.
Wow. You're an incredible human. And I just have to say, you're a warrior. I mean, I just can't even imagine, you know, we all have different tolerances. And, you know, you're telling me it was hard. You had pain. You had to take pills all day long. You did have depression. You had mental health issues from this diagnosis and probably also from medication side effects, but you kept going. You finished your residency. You did your chief residency, your fellowship. That's so admirable. But I'm just wondering where you stand now, having been through so much for so long, because that wasn't even just like a few months or something, years and years of that, discovered what you did, made the transition, where you stand now. Do you feel so much passion because you remember what it was like? And because you know that there's so many people that are still in that space where you were that might be helped by a lifestyle change? I mean, is that something that you think about all the time?
every day. I mean, that's what drives me, right? I mean, because I know what it's like to be in that hospital bed and feeling lost and hopeless. And when I hear MS specialists and MS doctors say things like diet plays no role, lifestyle plays no role, and disease modifying therapies are the only management tool that MS patients have, it infuriates me, because it's a missed opportunity. So that if my message can get across to anyone suffering from this disease, then it serves the purpose of all of this. I believe that everything in our lives comes in our path with reason. That, you know, this experience that I had as a patient, and the period that I had of suffering, has to serve in some way. And so that's why I made the film. That's why I wrote the book. That's why I gave up my work in infectious diseases after 16 years of specializing in that field and really developing a reputation in the field of hepatitis and HIV, that I gave that all up to focus on a field that no one had heard of, lifestyle medicine. I opened one of the first practices in lifestyle medicine, had zero patients when I first started, and people thought I had lost my mind. And this is not alternative medicine or complementary medicine, or, you know, it's not counter conventional medicine. It is just what should be the foundation of all medicine, of every clinical practice. The foundation should always be prevention, right? Prevention is preferable to cure, right? So if we can prevent a disease from happening, then shouldn't we start there? So I think the messaging is very, very simple. And you're absolutely right. That's one of our detriments, is that people think that the solution to this complicated chronic disease epidemic in which we are living must be complicated. It is not. There are many things in medicine that are complicated. When I was managing HIV patients and understanding the pathophysiology of hepatitis C, and working with teams to develop, you know, molecules to treat targets in hepatitis C, those were complicated issues for sure that required a lot of thinking through. But these things are not complicated. They're very, very simple. And we know, we have the knowledge and understanding today to prevent 80% of the chronic diseases that we see today in clinical practice. And we as clinicians and physicians and healthcare professionals across our country and beyond need to speak to this loudly and effectively and ubiquitously. We need to coalesce our voices. And I think that's why organizations like the American College of Lifestyle Medicine are so important. And I'm so proud that organizations like that and the Institute of Lifestyle Medicine at Harvard are growing. Membership is growing because there's a sweeping awareness across our country that developing yet another drug to treat diabetes is not the answer to the diabetes epidemic, that it is addressing and having very serious conversations about what we're putting on our plate as Americans, how we are highly stressed, we're not sleeping, and we're largely sedentary. These are very, very important and difficult conversations that we need to have honestly with our patient population. Because if we give them the tools and we help them to understand that these decisions that we make every day are so critically important in our health outcomes, then I think that we can create meaningful change in our healthcare system. But unless we all speak to it, I think we're going to fall short.
And now for a very important message. Hey, veggie lover, if you are looking for free resources to guide you on your plant-based and healthy living journey, go to dryami.com/free for tons of free downloadable PDFs. Hundreds of people have taken advantage of my tips to help them reduce meat and dairy consumption, navigate eating out, and build satisfying plant-based meals. Download one or download them all, and don't forget to share with friends and family. DrYami.com/free. And now back to the episode. Yes. No, and I agree. I feel like there's so many physicians that are feeling burnout from the profession, yes, because most people that become doctors, they really do want to help people. You know, I know right now some doctors are not seen that way, you know, so, but we do, we want to see people getting better. We want to see people happy and joyful and pain-free.
Of course.
And whenever you're dealing day in and day out with not helping people do that, it does lead to burnout. It leads to that feeling like, well, what am I even doing here? I'm not even helping people. And so now that many healthcare professionals and really great medical students and residents too, they're learning about this and they're learning, there's a different way to approach this where I can actually make an effect in a person's life that will give them well-being and longevity and what they're seeking, you know, the health that they're seeking. So it is very, very powerful. So I hope more people learn this, not just physicians, but people out in the general public that are wanting to take control of their health.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit more about lifestyle medicine and defining it. For those that don't know, I know we do talk about it in this podcast, but not as much the actual definition, why you think it's so impactful, and maybe tell us what the six pillars are. I know you kind of mentioned some of them, but let's formalize it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, so lifestyle medicine is a clinical discipline that's focused on six, some people call it pillars. In my book, I'm very visual. So I like to use the analogy of a wheel. The wheel, because, and then if you would envision the spokes on the wheel, these six spokes, and the reason I say that is because then it sort of connects them. They're sort of dependent on one another. And I like to, and I say to patients, because some of us are so good at food or really good at exercise, but then we tend to not pay much attention to maybe too much alcohol, or we're not sleeping enough. So I think in order for us to reap the greatest benefit, we really need to tend to all six aspects, right? So the six spokes are diet and nutrition, which is the first, physical activity, stress management, effective sleep hygiene, a discussion on substance abuse issues, and then the sixth is social interconnectedness. And each of them sort of feed off of one another. They're so important. In, for example, if you exercise regularly, you're probably going to sleep better, right? And when you eat healthfully, you're more likely to exercise. So this is what the evidence tells us. And so I always say to patients, you may not be able to, I mean, I've been doing this, this plant-based lifestyle since 2003. So, and it's been a work in progress. Every year I do better and I strengthen different aspects of my lifestyle. But to ask patients to, because I think this is sometimes where we're asking patients to change things overnight. And if we don't achieve, 100% change overnight, that we feel somewhat like we've failed. And the beautiful thing about lifestyle medicine is it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, right? We're going at, and we have to be respectful and meet the patient where they are. And what are you willing to do today? What can we create in your environment today that will benefit these spokes that we've just talked about? So it may be something very small, as I'm willing, doc, to add a piece of fruit once a day to my diet. Okay, I'll take that. And then we talk about by adding that piece of fruit, let's talk about all the health benefits, you've just added an additional 4 grams of fiber to your diet. Those beautiful colors that you're ingesting, what does that represent? Phytonutrients, phytochemicals, how are they affecting my cellular health? So when you start to introduce those ideas, and these again are very simple concepts, patients get it. And that encourages them to take it another step further. And so I've been doing this for a little bit of time, and I think that that's the most effective way to support sweeping change. But again, it doesn't happen overnight. Where do you want to be 5 years from now, a year from now? I like to think of it as we're investing in our future, just like our 401k. We're saving a little bit every week. And over time, that accumulates and we see really special and important health outcomes. So lifestyle medicine is, again, and I say this all the time, because there are disciplines out there that are considered alternative and that are counter conventional medicine. And that's not what we are. We practice evidence-based medicine along with practice guidelines. If I have a hypertensive patient, I'm going to treat them with medications if needed, but I'm also going to, or a diabetic patient, we will use medication as needed. But the idea is to reduce dependency on pharmaceutical agents, because every medication has a side effect. And if at all possible, support the patient in reversing their disease state so that they can live the best quality of life. So those are the lessons that lifestyle medicine offers patients. And I think it's incredibly powerful. And as I said, these topics are really quite simple.
Yeah, I love it. And what I love the most about lifestyle medicine is that lifestyle medicine applies to everybody. Everybody. Every patient, every age, every condition in a state of health or in a chronic disease, it applies to everybody. Like, you can use it in every single specialty. Lifestyle medicine can be used in every single specialty. It's not like this little siloed thing where you only have lifestyle medicine patients. Really, hopefully all physicians at some point will all practice lifestyle medicine. Yeah. You know, I think that's what it's so wonderful about it. And what else I love about it that you were pointing out earlier is that whenever you become certified in lifestyle medicine, you also learn some coaching techniques. We learn how to approach patients in a different way. Like you said, meet them where they're at. We're not just like, okay, do this, give you the prescription, come back next week after you do that thing. You know, like we're more like, what are you willing to do? What are your goals, first of all? Because not all patients have the same goals. Maybe at the beginning of your journey, it was like, I really just want to feel less pain, or I want to be more mobile, or whatever. So we start with the patient where they are, what goals they have, and help them work through it. And it's accessible for everybody. One of the things I'm curious about from your story, whenever you had that aha moment and you learned about plant-based nutrition and how that could affect you, how long did it take before you realized, okay, I'm onto something, this is making a difference? How long was it between having that realization and being like, something's going on here that's really important?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And it's a question I'm often asked. I can tell you that in the beginning, it was scary, because my doctor said to me, what you're doing is irresponsible. You are a physician. You know that you're taking great risk, because you're now coming off of a medication that we know studies have shown can reduce your risk of having an exacerbation and reducing your risk of progression, and you're going to discontinue that. So, again, as a physician and as a scientist, it appeared irresponsible. But what he didn't understand, and by the way, this physician that I'm referring to is an extraordinary individual, a clinician and scientist, well recognized in his field. And he was simply advising me as he's been trained. And he certainly had my best interest in mind, I have no doubt. And of course, there was no proof at the time. I mean, I think we have more proof or more evidence today as to how diet affects MS through the microbiome, and we can talk a little bit about that. But at the time, there was really I just knew that the path that I was on was intolerable, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I mean, I look like a giraffe, meaning like all the injection site reactions, like I had run out of space. Like when going through my thigh, my legs, my belly, I mean, it was terrible, and I was in pain. And I just couldn't do it anymore. So I came to the realization, like, I just want to be free of these medications. Even if it's 5 years that I don't have to do this, it'll be well worth it to me. So when I first started, I can tell you the first year, I actually had an exacerbation. And that's when everybody was like, oh my God, what did you do? But I knew that things were getting better. I started to notice things like I had a little less fatigue. I always say this when I speak, or I could stay up past Jeopardy, you know, which was like a big deal. Like I would, my husband and I would watch, I'd be sleeping and he would watch it and tell me about it the next day. But little things like that. I remember even early on getting to my office at the VA. And so I would always have my cane in the car. And I remember one day getting out of the car and I would instinctively go to the back and grab the cane. One day I felt, you know what? I feel good enough today. I'm going to leave the cane in the car. And that was like, to me, a home run, you know, like little wins like that meant everything. And I started to lose a little bit of weight without even trying. Because I was, and I just felt happier. Some of that anxiety, that weight that I was carrying around, started to lift. And so there were little signs that things were going, and then the event occurred. I woke up and I couldn't, and that event that happened in late 2003, couldn't feel my arms. Woke up and there they were, gone. And then there was the guilt of like, what did I do? Did I bring this upon myself? And there was a lot of blame from people in my environment. But I fought through that. I got through so, you know, the treatment of an exacerbation is steroids. So I received Solimedrol for 3 days and it improved. And then I started, I just got back on the horse and I kept doing what I was doing, getting on my bike every day. And I could do 3-4 minutes. I know that sounds crazy, but 3 or 4 minutes on a bike without stopping, that was a big win for me. I couldn't, when I started, do 30 seconds on a bike without stopping. So I went back and my diet, more and more meticulous about what I was consuming, more and more colors on my plate, more and more plants on my plate. I was pushing aside the foods that at one point that I loved, that I thought were delicious. And I modified my palate. I learned, you know, one of the biggest wins for me was learning how to sleep. I was addicted to Ambien, addicted, like I could not sleep without it. I took that medication for 8 years straight every night, either Ambien and when I needed it a little bit more, I took a Xanax because everybody was giving it to me. So I was addicted. So coming off of that medicine and learning how to sleep, that was the hardest. Learning what my environment should look like, cool, dark, and quiet, pre-sleep rituals, all of those things, scheduling my sleep. I go to bed at 9 o'clock every night and I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, like clockwork. I don't have an alarm. I just do. I sleep like a baby. I sleep so peacefully. I have beautiful dreams. I mean, you know, I'm a professional sleeper. And at one point in my life, I would define my sleep structure as insomnia. I was terrible. And even as a young woman, before my diagnosis, I was always stressed and I would worry about my exam, worry about my boards, worry about, you know, always love, super anxious young woman, worried about everything. That's another gift that MS has given me. It's changed my perspective on life. There's little worry. There's a lot of peace and acceptance. I think that's so important, that so much of the suffering that we experience in life is our resistance to what is. When we accept whatever life brings us, life gets easier. And I learned how to do that. You know, I learned that no matter how difficult, and I'm not immune to difficulties. I receive them every day. But I remind myself every day that whatever it is that presents itself, that I have to accept that there's a reason why it's here. And again, this idea of learning that suffering comes from not accepting. That's a big lesson. And that's a tough one. Because I say that to a lot of young women who feel like the world is coming in around them and they feel crushed over particular. And I try to give them that perspective, like pull back and see the world as a bigger entity, and that this too will pass. That's another one that I love. It's true. This too will pass, no matter what difficult moment we're in. That and we're passing through a very difficult moment right now in our country and globally as a society. We're experiencing a very difficult time, but no matter what it is, that it will pass, and a brighter day will come. And so that's offered me a tremendous amount of strength. So, but the question that you asked me is, how long did it take? It really took, very early on, I saw signs that things were serving me. There is one day that I remember well. I talk about this day all the time. And the reason I remember it well is because I have a photograph of it was in July of 2005. It was about 2 years after the diagnosis. And I remember this day because I went to a wedding. A friend of mine had invited us, my husband and I, to his wedding. And I did two things on that day that are going to sound sort of silly to you, but to me, it meant a lot because I hadn't been able to do it in a long, long, long time. I wore heels and I danced with my husband. Those were two things that I didn't think I'd ever be able to do again. And I remember the joy of that day of being on that dance floor and just having the time of my life and just feeling so grateful for for 2 years earlier, walking with a cane and a diaper with the pillbox, to this young woman who was just joyful and hopeful and expectant that many beautiful things were just around the corner. This past October 11th, 2020, that just passed, that was exactly 25 years since I was diagnosed and in that MRI machine that night. And on that day, I ran 25 miles on my own 2 feet, medication free. So I have much to be grateful for.
Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited process ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a healthy living routine. Find recipes for every lifestyle, including plant-based diets. Green Chef delivers quality whole foods with limited process ingredients, including low added sugar and sodium smart options. Choose from 80 plus flavor-packed options and take back time in your kitchen with dinner ready in 30 minutes and lunch in 10. Try 15 plus new recipes every week. Green Chef will deliver everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes pre-measured ingredients, some produce which is pre-chopped, and custom sauces that are pre-made in-house. They also provide the recipe cards, and the meals are really simple to make. It's a delicious, fresh, home-cooked meal without the hassle. We've really enjoyed using Green Chef, trying out all the delicious recipes, as well as saving time. It takes a lot of the work out of planning meals and gathering the proper ingredients so that you can just cook and enjoy your meal. It's a great option for busy families that want fresh, home-cooked, healthy meals to put on the table. And I know a lot of us worry about waste, and we do everything we can to reduce waste. So this may be one of your hesitations when subscribing to this type of service. Well, Green Chef also cares about the planet. April is Earth Month, and sustainability is a core to the Green Chef brand. Green Chef offsets 100% of delivery emissions and 100% of plastic in each box. Green Chef also partners with Plastic Bank to collect ocean-bound plastic pound for pound for every box they deliver. If you're frustrated by lack of time to eat healthy and you are ready to try Green Chef and see how easily you can integrate it into your healthy lifestyle, go to greenchef.com/IAMHUMAN50, that's IAMHUMAN50, and use code IAMHUMAN50, IAMHUMAN50, to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. So go to greenchef.com/IAMHUMAN50 and use code IAMHUMAN50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. I know you're busy. So am I. But do you have 2 minutes? If you have just 2 minutes, you have enough time to eat healthy, nutritious meals. The solution to your overscheduled life is Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. These meals are chef-crafted, fresh, and never frozen, and they are delivered straight to your doorstep. They offer a weekly menu of 35 options, including vegan and veggie meals. They also have 60 add-ons each week, including breakfast, snacks, and beverages like smoothies and juices. The fresh juice shots are so good. This week, I got to try the peanut Buddha bowl that had sweet potatoes, broccoli, quinoa, veggies, and a yummy peanut sauce, and the tangy citrus tofu bowl that included cauliflower rice, sweet potato, tofu, edamame, chickpeas, and a tangy citrus sauce. They were super yummy. My husband and my son loved them too. The meals feature premium ingredients, and because they are fully prepared and ready to heat, it eliminates the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. It's an amazing option for those seasons in life that are particularly time constrained. You can also pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. In April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long and will use Earth Month Eats badges on their lowest carbon footprint meals. Are you ready to try Factor? Head to factormeals.com/DrYami50. That's DrYami50 and use code DrYami50. That's DrYami50 and get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code DrYami50 at factormeals.com/DrYami50. That's DrYami50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with products intended to bring your mind and body back in harmony. They consider themselves a by women and for women company, and they now offer a nutrient-dense green powder called Daily NutriGreens. Myself and my staff here at Nourish Wellness all tried the Daily NutriGreens, and we loved it. The Daily NutriGreens contain an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. It also contains other important nutrients, such as B12, iron, zinc, and selenium. The Daily Greens are certified organic, and all you have to do is mix it with water, but you can also easily add to your smoothies, your oatmeal, or your baked goods. The Daily NutriGreens are vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO. And another bonus is that the packaging is compostable. Yay! When I tried the apple banana Daily NutriGreens, I was surprised by the pleasant and mild flavor. It was easy to prepare and drink and didn't leave any aftertaste. And I felt great afterwards. It's really easy to create a daily ritual around your green drink. Integrate it into your daily self-care routine. A green powder is one way to fill the gap in daily nutrition and is an easy and convenient way to get in your greens. These powders are a great way to add more nutrients into your diet during busy times, travel, and transitions in life when you don't have time or access to fresh green veggies. If you're interested in trying Equilibria's Daily NutriGreens, head to myeq.com and use code DrYami, that's DrYami, for 15% off Equilibria's Daily NutriGreens and much more. That's myeq.com and use code DrYami, DrYami, at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. And now for a very important message. Hey, Mama, if you are feeling frustrated about mealtime battles, worried that your child isn't eating enough or eating enough vegetables, afraid that your child is going to get some awful deficiency or disease because of the lack of diversity in their diet, I wrote a book that might be for you. A Parent's Guide to Intuitive Eating, How to Raise Kids Who Love to Eat Healthy is available in paperback, ebook, and audiobook through all major online booksellers. Did you know that most children are born with the innate ability to eat the appropriate amount of food to satisfy their hunger and support appropriate growth? Despite this, parents are still anxious and confused about how much and what to feed their children. In addition, many children are labeled as picky eaters or develop behaviors such as hiding and sneaking food. There's also a growing epidemic of dieting behaviors and eating disorders beginning at alarmingly young ages. In my book, you'll learn the 5 pillars of healthy eating, how to apply intuitive eating through all the stages of development, lifestyle habits that support healthy eating and body image, troubleshooting and problem solving for picky eaters, overeating, and dieting behaviors, how to create and foster a healthy body image in your children, how exploring your own body image and relationship with food will help raise an intuitive eater, and what foods to offer your child at different stages of development. A Parent's Guide to Intuitive Eating, How to Raise Kids Who Love to Eat Healthy, available in paperback, ebook, and audiobook through all major online booksellers. Are you ready for a fresh approach to feeding your child? For more information, visit dryami.com/book. And now, back to the episode. Wow, so amazing. So many gems. I just love everything that you have to say, especially that acceptance of reality. I don't know if you have learned from Byron Katie, what she likes to call loving what is. You know, like sometimes there's reality of our situation and we may not be able to change some things, and we create more suffering by trying to change things that we may not have control over. So many gems. And I'm just so grateful that you saw that article, you took it upon yourself, and you were so determined, because that also took a lot of strength. Whenever you see patients and clients, both as patients or, you know, if you do some coaching, what do you feel that they struggle with the most when it comes to habits and behaviors? What are some of the most more difficult things for people to work on and change?
I think the most challenging of the six spoke, I mean, everyone's different and comes in with for different reasons, but I think the most challenging for me to convey to patients is the food aspect, because there's so much confusion about what a healthy diet looks like. You know this. Every day there's a new article that's published, or there's a new fad diet or a new book that claims to have the answer to what is a healthy diet. And it really, the whole terminology, and particularly for women, like my generation of women, when I was a young woman growing up, you know, it was about healthy meant skinny. And the smaller you were, the better. So we had to fit into our Jordache jeans or Sarucci jeans. I don't know if you remember those. You may be too young to remember those. But and the way that we dealt with diet was we restricted intake. We counted calories. We weighed food. So we had this generation of women that has this terrible relationship with food. And food should be the most glorious and joyous, one of the most glorious and joyous aspects of our life. And we've created this food monster. Carbs are bad. Fat is bad. I need more protein. Like all of these misconceptions that flow freely throughout society, and they get, you know, perpetuated throughout. And there's so many, every individual that comes into my office with all of this background, and I say to them, let's just erase all of that history we have with food. Let's just put it aside and let's start anew. Food, healthy eating is so easy. It's so easy. It's really about the plant. It's about centering that plate with the plant. And why? Let's talk about what is inside of that plant that makes it so great. I mean, these are really simple themes. Maybe it's me. I'm a simple lady. I like things real straightforward. And it's really about increasing and forget about all that terminology. So I think the food piece is really, really challenging. The other aspects are easier to manage and to introduce and helping patients understand how valuable they are. But for me, the food piece is always so complicated because there's a lot of people are sort of embedded in their beliefs, right? They're entrenched in their beliefs. So it's really hard to pull them out of that. And you want to be very respectful, because you don't, because they might come in and say, well, my mom said, my, you know, and mom's never wrong. We don't want to upset anyone. So I often invite patients to bring their significant other or bring their, whoever they want to bring, so that we can have a conversation together. And the other piece is that I am not all knowing. I do my best every day. There's nothing in medicine, by the way, that is black and white. If you think it's black and white, then you're off, because, you know, things change all the time. And we have to be fluid as physicians and healthcare professionals and scientists. We're looking at the literature as it speaks to us near daily. And so I'm very cognizant of that. But I say, and I share the literature with them, because I want them to understand that this is not Dr. Stancic's subjective opinion. This is based on an incredible body of peer-reviewed medical literature. And I share it with them to help them understand these theories, these concepts, because you know what? They're going to go to their internist, or they're going to go to their endocrinologist or their cardiologist, and they may not understand this by no fault of their own, because again, that's the other side of this, that and the reason why I made Code Blue, because we need to bring attention to modifying the curriculum taught in medical schools to reflect this. That's a huge issue that we need to face to correct the course here. But I think that the food aspect is most definitely, at least for me, I'm curious to know from your perspective, particularly as a pediatrician, and speaking to mothers and the whole dairy thing, I think that must be really challenging.
Yeah. And when you were talking earlier, the word that came to mind was baggage. Food, yes. and eating comes with so much baggage. And there's still so many people that struggle, because I focus on intuitive eating and health at every size. And believe me, I have a massive audience for that, because there's so many mamas that they themselves are still struggling with their body and their diet. And whenever we're ourselves as parents struggling, it makes it really awkward and complicated when we feed our children, you know, because we're like, well, is that good? Is that going to make them fat? Or if they're not eating enough, this is that going to, you know, so it just makes it really, really weird for some parents. And so you're right. I think that eating and food history comes with a lot of baggage. There's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot to relearn, and it doesn't happen overnight. I know, because I had to go through this myself. It takes time. It takes patience. Where would you feel like there might be some easy wins for people? Is there places where, you know, like a lot of people, it's kind of like one of those tweaks or like a flip of a switch that they can start making some changes to their lifestyle?
That's a good one. I think it's just like we mentioned earlier, just introducing one aspect that you feel comfortable you can apply. Like, I'm going to add a piece of fruit once a day. That's it. And when we meet up again in a month, what could we build upon with that? And they'll notice that, you know what, doc, my bowel movements are better. I've noticed that. That's one of the, this actually happened to me. I had a patient come in for their 2-week follow-up. I opened the door and she came in and just gave me this big hug. She said to me, Dr. S, I am pooping every day and I am so happy. I know that sounds crazy. Nobody really likes to talk about poop, but that's one of the most immediate benefits of
I love talking about poop. First of all, I'm a pediatrician and I spent 30 years constipated. So anybody that interviews me for a podcast, they get my constipation cure story and they learn how much I love pooping.
Pooping is good. We're on the same page. Pooping is the best. And when you've been constipated for years and all of a sudden you're pooping effortlessly, it makes a big difference. So that's one of the most immediate effects from this diet, is that change in bowel movements. And that again, you know, every one of these little positive signs that we see builds to the next one and serves the patient to continue on the path. And that's what I've witnessed. And I think it's wonderful. And then, you know, you do their blood work and all of a sudden they see their hemoglobin A1C improve or fatty liver disease, or see their transaminases improve. That's another thing, you know, as a physician who for many years in my career, I managed hepatitis patients, and, you know, hepatitis C used to be the number one cause of liver transplantation in our country. It's not anymore. It's now NASH. Right? So non-alcoholic fatty liver disease evolves into non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, which is what NASH is all about. And so think about it, even our diet and lifestyle is contributing to the number one cause of liver disease, which is leading to liver transplantation. It's crazy.
That's incredible. And I know every time I hear that stat, it shocks me all over again. And I'm Latin American. And I know that Americans are disproportionately affected by fatty liver disease. And I know family members that have been affected by it. And we don't talk enough, I think, in the Latin American community about our diet and lifestyle and how it can be impacted, how it can impact those conditions. So, yeah. And you know, what I was thinking, whenever you're talking to your patients about making these small changes, the mantra there really is progress over perfection. Because like you said it earlier, sometimes I feel like we want to have these goals. We want to change everything at once. We want to just go extreme, but that doesn't help us sustain and maintain these habits. So starting little by little, getting that one down, moving on to the next level, little by little, that helps us sustain and maintain these habits instead of like crashing and burning or doing the nothing part. Well, it's going to be too hard, so I'm not going to do anything at all. I think that that's such a great concept that I want more people to learn, that it's okay to start with the smallest thing and then add on to it.
So right. It's the term that you used before, baggage. I think also in the past, we've been all about, I want to lose 10 pounds in 3 weeks. That whole, if I don't do it in 3 weeks, then I'm moving on. I failed. And then we abandon. It's like those New Year's resolutions. This is why I don't like New Year's resolutions, because people will start out with a bang and then it fizzles out because, you know, it's not about that. And by the way, when you're implementing these lifestyle changes and maybe you have a bad day, you make a mistake, it's okay. Like, don't be so hard on yourself. We're so particularly women. Oh my God, we self-flagellate. It's terrible. We need to stop doing that. It's okay. Let's learn from that experience. Like, why did I make that not so great choice? What was happening in that moment? Like, peel back the layers and understand what led to that, so that next time that very same thing happens, we're better equipped to manage it differently and to approach it differently. But my goodness, let's love ourselves. Let's be kind to ourselves, and let's stop with this like negative, imagery and oh, I'm bad, or gosh, let's just be kind. It's interesting how we're so kind to everyone around us, but we tend to be most hard on ourselves.
Yes, we have these unrealistic standards, but I love that, seeing these little bumps in the road as learning opportunities, not as evidence that there's something wrong with us or that we failed, but just being curious about it. Oh, wow. I reached for a couple of donuts today. Why is that? Could it be because I only got 4 hours of sleep last night? Maybe. How can I get to sleep earlier? Or how can I improve my sleep? And just like you were saying, these habits, they all feed into each other. And some of us have keystone habits that are really important for us to tackle so that it can help us progress in our other habits. But I love it. I love that philosophy. What do you wish more people knew?
We've talked about this, but how simple this is. It's so simple. It's not complicated. And that if we could convey that message effectively, it would do so much good. Because I think we're often afraid to introduce changes in our life, and this applies to anything, because we think it's going to be so complicated and it's going to overwhelm us. I think the simplicity of all that we talk about in lifestyle medicine, you know, I just want to say one other thing is that what benefits, because people say this to me all the time, the diet that you discussed, Dr. Stancic, is that an MS diet? Or what is the best diabetes diet? No, this is the same diet for everybody. So if you come to see me because you're concerned about your MS, I'm going to say the same thing to you as if you come to see me for your poorly controlled diabetes. It's the same thing. But we want to complicate it. Like, here's the Alzheimer's diet, or here's the, you know, cancer diet. It all falls into this. It's simple. Eat more plants. And that's it. And eat all kinds of different plants. And the other thing that maybe we don't talk about, which is really important. I'm also Latin American. I'm from Cuba. And so the dietary profile that is unique to me or that I enjoy may be very different than, I don't know, my Italian American husband, who may have, again, but we exchange ideas. The point is that each culture has vast options in the plant-based kingdom. You know, just because nutrition profile is different than someone else's doesn't mean that it's less effective, right? We should enjoy and respect our cultures and consume the foods that we love. I think about all the beautiful foods my mother prepared in the kitchen when I was a little girl. I want that in my life. We can certainly improve upon it and we can make some modifications, but we shouldn't abandon who we are and our culture and what we love. Kale is great, but if kale is not part of something, I mean, there's so many other greens that we can introduce into our lives that may be reflective of who we are, our culture, and what we most enjoy. I want food to be blissful. I want us to, I mean, think about when we gather for celebrations, Thanksgiving, whatever, Christmas, whatever holiday, a wedding. We sit and we share a meal with our family and friends to celebrate. So that joy, when we sit at the table with our families, should be something that we experience daily. It shouldn't be something, and food can be not only delicious, I mean, not only healthful and support healthy health outcomes, rather improved health outcomes, but it can also be delicious. I think that's the other thing that people don't understand. Oh my goodness, plant-based diet, that's carrot sticks and celery sticks. It is so not that. It is so adventurous, and there's so many options, and there's so many wonderful plant-based chefs that are you know, available to us, and plant-based recipes and websites and books. It's growing exponentially because people are beginning to recognize how powerful it is. Not only are they feeling great, but they're really enjoying food on a new level. I mean, plant-based, I mean, you know this. There's so many beautiful recipes that are so enjoyable and again, are going to keep us fit and healthy and our cholesterol just where it should be and our blood sugars where they should be so that we can age gracefully, right? So I say this all the time, and I may sound like a broken book, a broken record, and it's in my book. My hope for each and every one of us is to age gracefully with dignity, right? And on that very last day on planet Earth, at age 102, hopefully, or 104, that we spend this beautiful day surrounded by family and friends consuming a beautiful diet, a beautiful plate. And on that night, we go to bed and we pass away peacefully without having that end, you know, that bookend of pain and suffering in the nursing home that I've known very well as an infectious disease physician and going through seeing those patients in the nursing home setting or in the ICU status post stroke, in the nursing home with the Foley catheter and the infected pressure ulcer, all of those things that I've witnessed, Alzheimer's, asking a patient, I'm going to check your bottom, asking for permission, and they have no idea who they are or where they are. It's painful. So witnessing that day in and day out, I would leave that hospital broken. And in retrospect, knowing all that I know today, that those cases are largely preventable. We should not have to end our lives in that fashion, that we can have that beautiful ending to our lives where we're with our families, we're clear of mind, we're able to enjoy them and then pass peacefully.
That's such a beautiful vision and such a beautiful hope for everybody to have that. That's what I want too. And I think we share a lot in our philosophies with our approach to food as well. In the United States, even though we are seen compared to the rest of the world as some of the most health conscious individuals on the planet, we also derive the least pleasure from our food. And it's because we have all these food rules. We have all of this. We feel like we need to externalize, you know, we have to have a diet and a calorie count and macro count or whatever, but it's so simple, like you were saying, and it is amazing and abundant. My favorite word to describe a plant-based diet is abundance, because they were talking about kale. You don't have to eat kale if you don't want to. There's like a bazillion other greens. You know, sometimes people ask me, well, I'm allergic to soy, so I can't be vegan. I can't be plant-based. So I was like, do you know that soy is one of 400 edible beans? 400. Yes. So, I mean, the abundance is huge. So, and I mean, I love food so much. There's no way I could eat a diet that wasn't delicious. So everybody just needs to trust me. Believe me. I love the food.
Dr. I love food too. I'm with you.
Oh, and then one thing I want to tell you, I am actually going to be interviewing a Cuban American chef in a couple of weeks. Raidel Hernandez, I believe. I have his book on my shelf, but I'll let you know after we get off so that you can look him up too. He just released a book full of vegan Cuban recipes. So,
God, I have to get that book.
So I want to know about your personal habit that you're most proud of and why.
Well, I think that my personal habit that I'm most proud of is how good a sleeper I am. I already mentioned that to you, but when it comes to sleep, I should be wearing like a cape. I'm like a superhero. I'm so good at it. 9 o'clock, I get into bed and I fall asleep within 5 to 10 minutes. Well, you know, the other thing that I do is I pray, I offer gratitude or some type of meditation. That's an important part of my practice. And then I wake up at 5 o'clock and refreshed. And I still, by the way, you know, I am by no means cured. I live with MS. So I, even in at night, because of all the damage to my bladder, I may have to get up a couple of times to go to the bathroom. But I honestly don't even like, I can do that and just go right back to bed and I'll fall asleep. Right. You know, it doesn't interrupt the flow of my sleep. And when I wake up in the morning, I have tons of energy. I feel 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm ready to just take over the world. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, I feel amazing. And so, again, offering gratitude, I think that's so, so important. Some type of meditation or prayer, whatever works for you, but that calming the mind, quieting the mind and being very mindful, is an important part of all of this. But I think the sleep part, because I was so addicted or on these hypnotics, that knowing that I don't need that is really, for me, very powerful.
Wow. Not only do you not need them, but you sleep probably better than the majority of Americans. I mean, that's pretty amazing. I would say that many people struggle with their sleep, and sleep is so important for so many different things. I am also one of those people that's very protective about my sleep. So I'm in bed early. I'll say sometimes I'm going to stay up with you guys, and literally by like 8:30, I'm like, yeah, just kidding. I'm going to bed. Never believe me if I tell you I'll stay up with you, because I will change my mind as soon as I get sleepy. But no, I love how you call yourself a professional sleeper. That is the best ever. Dr. Jansen, this has been so fabulous. Could you please tell us how to connect with you, where we can find your documentary and your book, and if people want to try to see you, how they can reach you? Please tell us all those details.
Yeah. So I guess the easiest way is my website. It's drstancic.com. CodeBlueDoc.com is for the film, but on drstancic.com, you'll have a link to the film as well. And the book is entitled What's Missing from Medicine, because this is what's missing from medicine. This is the piece of the puzzle that I hope is added to the curriculum of every medical school, because I do want the foundation of all medical practice to be this. And you said this so beautifully. This is part of oncology. It's part of cardiology. It's part of endocrinology. It should be part of every aspect in clinical medicine. So that's why the title of the book is What's Missing from Medicine. The book was released on January 12th. And so I hope that it resonates. And the book is a simple, honest conversation between myself and the reader. It's not heavily scientific. I didn't want this to be a scientific text. I wanted it to be light. I tell stories. I tell my story. I talk about how I think we got to where we got to and what we need to correct course. And I think the steps that are needed for us are pretty straightforward. We need to focus more on this preventive wing in medicine, place a little bit of emphasis and respect to it, because we haven't given it its day in the light. Preventive medicine. I don't know if you took preventive medicine when you were in medical school. I took a course entitled Preventive Medicine, and you know what? It was all about colonoscopies and mammograms, and that's secondary prevention. What we're talking about here is primary prevention. Why we want to prevent the disease from happening. And so shifting that terminology and helping healthcare professionals understand what, in fact, primary prevention is and how much we can do to regain control of our personal health, I think that that's the solution to the problem that we are facing. And one last thought, as an infectious disease physician living through the COVID-19 pandemic and with the background of this awareness that I have as someone who appreciates preventive lifestyle medicine, keep this in mind that we know in our country where more than 50% of Americans are living with at least one chronic disease. If you have one chronic disease, the CDC has reported that you're 6 times more likely to be hospitalized if you were infected with COVID-19 and 12 times more likely to die. So bringing these connections together, understanding that we are a country that is poorly equipped to battle this acute infectious contagion because we are a country drowning in chronic disease. I hope that the silver lining here is that this difficult period will shed light on how important it is for us to take care of ourselves, to make better decisions so that we don't live with chronic disease. It is regrettable that so many of us currently are suffering from diseases that are, we know, preventable.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's so true. And I didn't know those stats. That's pretty alarming. 12 times more likely to die.
More likely to die.
That's just one chronic condition. So imagine some people have multiple. My husband's an internal medicine hospitalist, so his life is opposite of mine. Yes. And so he deals with patients that are coming in on 30 medications, multiple chronic conditions, and their risk is very, very high. They can get sick very quickly.
Right.
Well, Dr. Stancic, one more task for you today. If you can please leave us with one call to action for the week, what is one lifestyle habit that we can implement this week to improve our lives?
Wow, that's a good question. I think, how about this? How about offering gratitude? We're living in a very difficult time. There's a lot of anger in society. We've dealt with difficult moments. You know, and there's a topic that I've been lately focused on in supporting individuals who have been really weary with social media and some of the messaging that comes across, and young people, and you as a pediatrician, I'm sure, where the toll that social media can take in depression and suicide and so many negative comments and all of that. I think we have to be very aware of what our children are picking up on these social media outlets, what we're feeding off of. And I think for a moment, just taking a breath, becoming very, very mindful of what role these technologies have on our overall anxiety and depression, and maybe take a little bit of time to step away from it and spend more time in that what we call period of mindfulness, of prayer, of gratitude. Because there are so many wonderful things in our lives, and we need to focus on those to get us through these difficult, more difficult moments. I think there's been a lot of this year has been difficult for so many of us, and recently we've had some challenges. And I hope that we can just take a deep breath, offer gratitude, and know that things are going to be okay.
I love it. I love your philosophy. I love your approach. So many gems. For the listeners, please, if you haven't already, watch Code Blue. You can stream it online. I watched it through Amazon recently. So you can definitely do that and pick up Dr. Stancic's new book, What's Missing from Medicine. It's got a beautiful cover with her on it. I love the cover. It's so pretty. So thank you so much. You're so passionate. You have so much energy. You're making such a huge difference in people's lives. And this is going to have just a ripple effect. So I'm very grateful for you. And I hope that you have a very fantastic day.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure.
Hey, veggie lover. I hope that you loved today's episode. Will you take a second and do me a huge favor? Please subscribe to my podcast so that you never miss an episode. You're the reason I'm here, and I want to share it all with you. Thank you for listening, and have a plantastic day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.